WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Last June, Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon, who had been partners for 55 years, made it official. They were the first gay couple to be married under the 2008 ruling by the California Supreme Court legalizing same-sex marriage in that state. Actually, it was their second wedding. In 2004, they took vows with over 4,000 other same-sex couples, but a month after that wedding, the state court invalidated all same-sex marriages. Del Martin died on Wednesday. She was 87 years old. In a statement, Phyllis Lyon said, "I am devastated, but I take some solace in knowing we were able to enjoy the ultimate rite of love and commitment before she passed." Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon are considered the mothers of the gay rights movement. They co-founded the Daughters of Bilitis, the first national lesbian group in the country, in 1955. It was created as an alternative to the gay bar scene, but developed into an activist group with the mission of helping lesbians to discover their potential and find their place in society. The Daughters of Bilitis disbanded in the 1970s, but Martin and Lyon remained outspoken advocates of gay rights. When Terry Gross interviewed them in 1992, they had been a couple for nearly 40 years. Terry asked them if they knew there was such a thing as a lesbian when they started having feelings towards women. Del Martin answered first.
No.
No.
Sexuality was not talked about in those days, and let alone homosexuality.
Yeah, we're talking way back in the 30s and 40s and 50s, I didn't really find out about lesbians until I met Del, actually.
And what year was that?
That was in
1949,
right. And I knew vaguely that there were such things as male homosexuals, but that was about it. But when I look back, I know that I was always fascinated with women. I just didn't have a clue as to what to do about that.
Del, what about you? What was the first time that you had a sense that you felt things toward other women?
Oh, when I was about 10 or 12. And I figured that I was different and I was the only one.
The only one in the world?
The only one in the world. That's a story we hear over and over again in our age group. Everybody thought, oh, I'm the only one.
Where did you each find out more about other lesbians, about the fact that you weren't alone? Did you turn to books? Did you turn to other people?
Well, there really weren't any books, except, you know, unless you went to the first you had to know the word homosexual or lesbian in order to look anything up.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was nothing that was any good in the libraries in those early days.
And mostly it just told you how sick you were.
So it frightened you when you found the books, actually.
Right. There's no way that we could identify with that. I think the first book that I read that helped me out was Radcliffe Hall's book.
The Well of Loneliness, yeah.
You both read that?
No, I didn't. Somehow or other I missed that. So that I was still, I was through college and working before I found out about lesbians. And that was only because it was about 1949 that Del and I and another woman we worked with were having drinks at the press club in Seattle after work. And somehow or other the subject came up and Del said she was a lesbian. And I was fascinated because I'd never met one before, I thought. And the first thing I did when I got home was call everybody I knew and tell them.
Tell them about Del?
Yeah. I didn't know that was a bad thing. Fortunately, it had no repercussions to speak of.
Yeah, talk about outing.
Talk about naivete.
Del, you had already been married. What happened to end the marriage?
I fell in love with a woman next door. And that, my feelings were really awakened by then, and I just felt I needed to do something about it.
When you started being a couple, a lot of lesbian relationships were in the kind of butch femme mode. Was your relationship that way too early on?
Well, it was sort of, yeah. I think that it didn't really stay that way very long, although to all intents and purposes, we were still a butch femme couple in public. Since Della decided, when I met her, I decided she was a butch, I didn't have much of an option. So I became a femme. I've often thought I would have made a really good butch. And besides which, I did all of the butch kind of things, if you will. I mean, I drive, and Del doesn't, and I can drive a nail in, and she can't, and, you know, stuff like that. But we conformed to what the going thing was outside the home, but not certainly didn't do it when we were at home.
Yeah, I was a sissy butch.
Yeah.
So there was pressure on you. You felt that, like, I mean, from what you knew about lesbian couples, this is the way it had to be. This is the way it was supposed to be. Butch and femme.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, that's how everybody was doing. Because at that point in time, nobody, the only model anybody had was mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody was kind of following that.
You met in 1949. In 1955, you co-founded Daughters of Bilitis. Why did you feel you wanted to start some kind of organization? And what did you have in mind when you started it? What did you want it to be? What did you need it to be?
Well, it wasn't our idea, but we had met a lesbian through a couple of gay men that lived around the corner from us. And she called us one morning, Saturday morning, and said, how would you like to join with us in a social club for lesbians? And we were just delighted because we didn't know any, and we were so starved for socializing with other lesbians that we jumped at the chance. What Daughters of Bilitis started out to be was a very secret lesbian social club.
Where did the name come from, Daughters of Bilitis?
From the Songs of Bilitis by Pierre Louis, which is a long lesbian narrative poem.
It's a poem you knew?
The lesbian who invited us to join the club had read the book, and she offered that as a suggestion for the name of it.
She thought that lesbians would know what Bilitis meant, but nobody else would. I don't think that was true, because I don't think most lesbians knew about the Songs of Bilitis. However, it worked out as a name.
It was supposed to be a secret, and we have spent many, many years now trying to explain the name.
So I guess it worked pretty well. You know, some people, when they hear the name, think it sounds like a disease, Bilitis.
Well, that's why we pronounced it Bilitis.
Instead of Bilitis, like phlebitis?
Instead of Bilitis, because we didn't want it to sound like a disease. And that was at the time, you know, when Eisenhower had ileitis. And so we said, no, it's got to be Bilitis, so it doesn't sound like an illness.
So you were trying to keep the organization, you know, very, very secret to protect the members. Were there ways that lesbians could let other lesbians know who they were, like little cues lesbians could give each other through the way they dressed or wore their hair or whatever?
Well, I think that's probably why so many lesbians dress pretty butchy, to let others know that here's a possibility.
Did you go to the bars at all before or after you co-founded Daughters of Bilitis?
Oh, yeah.
What was the bar scene like then?
Well, what was it like? It was for many lesbians, it was the only outlet. It was the only place they had to go where they could be themselves. It was the only place they knew to go to meet other lesbians, for sure, you know, without being, you know, perhaps making a costly mistake. And it's true, there was a lot of drinking, and which is what goes on in bars. But it was the only place. It was the only...
And it was a risky place.
Yeah.
Because periodically there would be police raids. And One of the things that we worked through on that one was during the Daughters of Belitis, when we started to have public
discussion
forums,
meetings.
Discussion meetings, and we got attorneys to come and talk to us and tell us our rights. And what we found when a bar raid took place, that most everybody pleaded guilty and to a plea of disturbing the peace or visiting a house of ill repute or whatever to get out of it and pay a fine. But in actuality, what they were pleading guilty to was being gay, because they hadn't done anything that was illegal in these places. They were just there. So when we found an attorney who said, just plead nulla contendere, so you were there. And then when the police officer was asked, you know, what we did or in the bars, all I could say is they just rounded us all up. And there was nothing that the court could do but let us go. When I say us, I'm talking about lesbians in general. Phyllis and I never got caught up in a raid. We missed one by a day, another by a week, but we didn't get caught up. But we did find legal help for those who did.
Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon, speaking with Terry Gross in 1992. Del Martin died this week at age 87. Phyllis Lyon is her surviving spouse. To hear their 1992 conversation in its entirety, visit our website, freshair.npr.org.